Swift as a deer, quiet as a shadow. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Quick as a snake, calm as still water. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Strong as a bear, fierce as a wolverine. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. Comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Why is that?
That was a first edition card. We read it when we spoiled it or reviewed that card. And that first edition card was busted.
That was a good one. That was a very good one. It was even a CCG card.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were the days. Back when Start got canceled.
Them's was the days.
FFG, if you're listening to this, please do not give Start Cancel in second edition.
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, for everyone involved, that seems like a bad idea. Also, don't reprint Fear Cuts Deeper Than Swords.
Yeah, exactly. I think that falls under the banner of don't give Start Cancel, right?
I could live with that, yeah. That seems similar.
Wait, am I not thinking of the right card? Wasn't Fear Cuts Deeper Than Swords the one that cancels an event that hits a Stark?
Wait, no, I think Fear Cuts Deeper was... what am I thinking of? I might be thinking of a different one. I think it's the one that, like, took 3 power when you win a challenge and was restricted to melee. I might have the wrong card. It doesn't matter. We're losing Scott. Let's move on.
Ah, come on. We already lost Scott anyway.
Oh, you can keep going. Keep going. I don't care.
Oh, man. For what it's worth, actually, Fear Cuts Deeper Than Swords is already a cancel in second edition. I'd already forgotten about it because it's not a good one. Yeah. So you know what? If you give Start Cancel like this, I'm fine with it.
Nice.
So anyway, this is episode 374 of the White Book. And you may have guessed that along with myself, Will, we also have Aaron returning for 2 weeks in a row, and Scott returning after a little bit of a scheduling-based hiatus. How's it going, guys?
Pretty well. Yeah. Pretty well. Like, overall, life is good. I'm ready to talk cards. I made a big control thing, so we're talking about my favorite thing in Thrones today.
It's always good to have a purpose, have something you're passionate about. Yeah.
Control. That's the way this game is meant to be played.
I miss it.
I think control is back, which is, I think, why we're starting with it. Beyond that, ooh, I just wanted to talk about it. I look forward
to hearing more.
Are like 15 T1 control decks right now, or T1S control decks. It's a very good archetype.
Well then, I look forward to chatting about that in just a little bit. Scott, you been up to anything exciting in the meantime?
No.
Just no.
Yeah. All right. That exciting.
Scott's like, I do no excitement.
You haven't featured in the news anymore?
I got a video that I was in about my building that was mostly following someone else. They did a video of. It was going to be on German TV, but now it's not.
German? Oh, whoa.
Sorry, I just got killed in Sentinels real hard.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well... take Aaron's mind off of it then. How about we talk new cards? FFG did throw a preview article at us for, was this the fourth chapter pack, I think? Yes, the fourth chapter pack in the King's Landing cycle. And, you know, there's a couple cards that I'm just kind of eh on, but there's one I'm pretty high on here in this article. So let's maybe start by taking a look at that. They dropped Kingdom of Shadows on us. That's right, a second Shadows agenda. So it says, you may include non-loyal characters with the printed Shadow keyword from any faction in your deck. Increase the cost of each character you marshal by one, and reduce the cost of the first character you bring out of Shadows each round by two.
That's phenomenal. In at least three factions, it's like super great. Like, not kind of great, like unbelievably nearly busted great. And Martell Lannister and Tyrell really love this. And like other factions might, because giving everyone access to the Martell Jump Out of Shadows girl is going to be really, really good.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking about. I was hoping to take a look at that particular thing. But okay, here we go. This is how I'll have to do it. Not quite as clean as I wanted. I was hoping to hit the advanced search on ThronesDB just for the Shadows keyword and non-loyal. But I think I pulled up a few other things. So let's see. The Martell girl you're talking about is the Starfall spy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just trading stuff in and out of Shadows. Very, very nicely there. It's kind of a small bummer that it is only characters. There's definitely a few other cards I would look at, but that would probably get a little too wild. Phew. A little too wild. But even something like Hagen's Daughter, man, Hired Assassins, if this takes off, will be everywhere. So you can play them as well. Ooh. I can grab Lazy Leo to shuffle my Clever Feints back in the deck.
Oh. Yeah, Lazy Leo's actually not bad at all. Clever Feint, though, means you are playing Main House Lannister.
Right. Which, you know, I'm not 100% sure if that's going to be the way to go, but that's what I want to keep looking at. But honestly, I think it might be stronger out of Martell main house. So you can grab, what's their Shadows reducer? Reduces the cost to put things into Shadows.
Yeah, Shadow City,
there we go.
Shadow City's really good.
Yeah, that feels like a lot of potential econ, but it does worry me a little bit looking at this pool, even with the non-loyal characters, all of them with Shadows. It worries me a little bit that anytime you are marshaling a character, it costs an additional one. Like, I'm not going to be able to go completely 100% Shadow. Right? Like that's not going to be viable.
I'm less sold on that. I think it might be reasonably viable. I don't think it's going to be great, but I think it might be viable.
You could ambush, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could ambush. That's something to be said for, well, those same three houses, then. Lannister, Martell, and Tyrell.
And that adds Targaryen.
Yeah, I think...
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, a few.
Targ has lots of stuff that does that.
I think it's only really for, like... Honestly, I don't think it's good as great as you guys are saying in general, but I think for, like, Martell jumpers, it's real good.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. Like, on the one hand, at first I look at it and I get super excited for the econ aspect of it. But then, you know, I kind of look at some of these cards. And in general, right, anything that we bring out of Shadows is already costing an additional one to, you know, do that with. Over whatever their base price is, say, you know, a Cersei or whatever, going from 6 to 7 costs, depending on whether you're running it through Shadows first, which really means that this econ boost is only 1 gold a turn for most Shadows cards. So, I don't know, it's not quite as big of a push as I want. So, I think it'll probably rely on grabbing all that non-loyal stuff for the real kicker.
That's a very fair point. I still think it's worth it.
I'm definitely going to give it a try, yeah.
I mean, your upside is so high, right? Like, if you can manage to make this all real cheap, your entire, like, game gets easier.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hope so. But you're only reducing the one character per round.
Yeah, but if you're doing it right, the one character you're reducing is almost always the Martell Shadow Girl, right? And if you're Tyrell, that one character you're reducing could be Margaery, and then you're putting everything else into play relatively
cheaply. Or Queen of Thorns, you mean?
Queen of Thorns, sorry, yeah, thanks.
I don't know if it's good enough with Shadow Girl. I think for Martell jumpers, it's good because you're just jumping, right? But
I mean,
Martell Shadow Girl, you're not going to get anything super expensive in Shadows because you don't have the Shadows agenda, the other Shadows agenda.
Well, assuming that there's not a bunch of more stuff coming, right?
I think it's probably safe to bet that there's a bunch of Shadow stuff coming this cycle, right? I mean, didn't we get a lot more?
We've thought we're going to
second cycle than we did the first.
Yeah, Bestow definitely got better in the second. I mean, also Lannister has a reasonable amount of really expensive Shadow stuff. Like Lannister really likes.
Yeah,
this.
That was my main hope that, you know, some of the stuff like Cat's Paw might be more reasonable now to at least hit something more than their very smallest character.
Cat's Paw was always reasonable. Cat's Paw's a good card.
Well, now it would be a crazy busted card.
That's what I'm hoping for. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can right. Definitely hit small stuff with it, but I'm hoping this kind of grease from the agenda, so to speak, means it's much more readily available to hit like mid range stuff.
It's a good hope.
I think they have to seed the pool, and they've made it seem like they'll seed the pool before, and they haven't. I hope they seed the pool.
I mean, I think the pool is relatively seeded. I think there's a reasonable amount of very, very, very good Shadow stuff right now. And I think there's at least a Shadows T1 deck, and probably more than just the one. So, like, I'm not sure, I mean, what more we want from Shadows than a T1 deck. And, like, someone online has been playing the crap out of Martell Lion Pure Shadows, and I'm not saying it's great, but it sure seems good. Like, early returns are promising. Like, if these decks exist, suddenly Shadows isn't.
Yeah, I mean, and if that deck is at least promising, this agenda's only upside over the banner, basically, right? I mean, maybe you're pulling in some non-loyal events or locations or something in a version of that, but...
And it doesn't make your in-house events and locations, like, more expensive. So, like, Starfall is still 3, and the Lannister location, which isn't Shadows for reasons I'm not clear on, is still 3.
Yeah, yeah. The, let's see, is that one Bowels? Yeah, Bowels of Casterly Rock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that one isn't either. But that does make me wonder...
It doesn't
do you think this agenda looks more tempting, less tempting, or about the same as Assault? Will it unseat our other Shadows agenda?
Assault is cooler because it makes everything Shadows, but like, and they both have relatively strict downsides. I don't know which is like strictly better. I like this a lot, and I think they make different decks, which is cool. I don't feel like that this is just the same thing as Assault decks, which is very nice. Scott?
What do I think about this compared to Assault? Is that your question for me?
Yes.
I think we had high hopes for Assault, and it I haven't seen a tier 1 assault deck yet.
I think you're wrong.
I think it's when people don't know how to play against it, then yeah, but I don't think it's as tier 1 as other tier 1s.
I mean,
so therefore not.
I think it's I think it's about as tier 1 as other tier 1s. Like, I think it's Martell Assault in particular struggles with Greyjoy Sea of Blood and beats, like, everything else.
But Greyjoy Sea of Blood is possibly the best deck in the game.
I very much disagree. I don't even know if it's top 5 anymore.
Ooh.
I think it's just because you know how to play against it right now.
I mean, I just think there's a lot of answers for Greyjoy Sea.
But I think it's the deck that shapes the meta, right? Like, people played cards just in decks just because it beats Greyjoy Sea.
Sure, but like, if that's the case, then, and everyone's playing stuff to beat Greyjoy Sea, then Greyjoy Sea is not a good meta call.
It's not a good meta call, but it might be the best deck in the game, so people still play it.
I don't think it's the best deck in the game.
Like, I mean, best deck in the I game. Think there's something...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish that thought.
No, go ahead, Will.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's something to be said for decks being, let's say, maybe a pacer deck in the meta, which it sounds like, you know, Greyjoy Blood might be.
Yeah.
Like, what everything else is being measured in relation to or planned around, which does not necessarily make it a bad deck or necessarily the best deck. It could fluctuate back and forth, as Aaron was saying, with meta choices, but it's still always kind of that consideration.
I think we need to get moving, though. We have a lot of cast to go.
That's fair.
What else came out?
There's a couple other preview cards here. Both are locations, one for Lannister and one for Tyrell. So the two of them have kind of similar...
Did we already have the Shadow of the Isles card?
Oh, did we not? Okay, that one's probably a little bigger. We can start there. Did you want to read that one, Scott?
Give me a second. Yeah. It's an event.
It's in the fan.
Oh, Shadow Vials here.
Greyjoy Loyal event. You can't regular play it, only Shadows. Shadows 1. Action. Each player chooses a non-limited location he or she controls and discards it from play. If there is a war plot revealed, return Shadow of the Isles to your hand instead of placing your discard. Just what we always wanted for Greyjoy.
It's something.
It's useless.
I don't think you play it, but like, can we get over this Greyjoy hates locations thing? We know it's a critical mass.
But this is going to be so fun in Melee. You can just make everyone at the table hate you.
I don't know what Melee is. Mala? Maloo?
Mala.
Malikalu.
Melikanikinaka?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. One thing I think rules-wise it's worth taking a look at with Shadow of the Isles is, since this doesn't say if able, you have to have a non-limited location to discard as well, right?
Yeah. Sounds right to me.
So you can't just go all limited to try and do something weird to play around this and not be hit, so just worth looking at. It definitely dings it in my book.
I just think it's bad. Like, it doesn't really matter. It's just a bad card. Like, why would you ever pay 3 for your location controlling Greyjoy to let the opponent choose which to discard?
And lose your own location, too. Yeah, you're paying 2 cards and 3 gold to knock out a location of their choice.
Right.
Like, it's that fun. Doesn't seem... Fox, Greyjoy can use some bad cards.
Yeah, look. I'm not complaining if they're getting bad cards. That'd be very cool. But, like, cool, but, like, it's still just a very, very bad card, and I'm not sure, like, what its use is, really. Like, if people want to make this good, like, I'm not sure why a newly made Lord isn't better. I'm not sure why their zero-cost event isn't better. They still have So... They have Sea of Blood. They have lots of things. Like, I don't know why this.
Because we lack creativity in card design.
I mean, I guess. Like, I'm fine with just getting a bad card. Everyone else does sometimes. Greyjoy hasn't in a while.
All right, I'm pretty sure this is part of a cycle, right?
I don't see a Lannister card. I found 2, a Stark and a Tyrell. Where's the Lanny one?
There's also a Lannister.
Oh, found one. It. Found it.
Yeah. And I accidentally skipped over the Stark one a moment ago, but I guess we actually got 3 of these locations.
So I'll read the Starks unless you have it open, and then we'll continue.
Yeah.
People have the cards open.
Go for
Power of the Hand. Cost 1. King's Landing traded. Non-loyal Stark. Reaction: after a card you control comes out of shadows, if there is a Winterplot revealed. Choose and stand a star character. We need a more stand, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. More juice for Mira? Hey, that seems pretty good.
I think it's okay. It's
the winter, like, requirement is definitely something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not sure if I'm running enough Stark Winter to care that this is a card.
Well, I don't think you care. I don't think you play this.
Yeah, it's if you're running a winter deck, you could play it. But I don't know if you should really be running winter decks right now either. So, like, I don't know. It's definitely a card that exists. If they can make winter good enough.
That's the catch. It is weird that I see the rest of this card and just think, oh, that's bonkers. But the winter mechanic as a whole has just been so behind summer comparatively that, yeah, I think maybe this doesn't actually see play.
I don't think it sees play.
I mean, I don't know how you could play it unless summer joins the meta.
I mean, winter.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Winter. Like, I'm not sure how you could. Well, even, no, if winter gets good, summer has to get bad before this is playable. Right?
Exactly.
Like,
it just says if there's a winter plot.
Oh, so if there's, like, a winter. I guess that helps.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter if your opponent's doing summer or not, just as long as you have a winter.
But it actually does matter, because then you're thinking about the decks as a whole, right? And a winter deck at Stark would want that, the econ location, and a bunch of other cards that say more winter than summer. So for the deck to work, you need summer to get that.
Stark just got the new best non-limited econ this time around, right?
Draw cards?
Yeah.
The stand one.
Maybe. Oh, the stand one.
Yeah. No. The non-limited one, the draw, which is literally just have Stark cards.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not running anything non-Stark in Stark decks anyway. Like, I'm not sure why that's not super great.
So then in that case, I think I missed the connection there to Tower then.
You don't need the Stark economy, which makes this better.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Or the neutral economy, you mean?
The neutral economy, yeah.
Does the weenie that relies on winter care about summer plots or not? I can't remember. I don't even remember his name.
Oof. Good question. Not sure which card he is.
No, I don't believe he does. I don't believe he does. Winter is
weird. Because you play three of them in that deck, obviously. And then if summer is good, it makes it worse.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Well, we might be going round and round on hypothetical dislocation. What about the others?
The Maiden Vault seems like a good thing to talk about.
Yeah. You got it open there?
I do.
Sure.
Two costs, Terrell location. It is not loyal. A shadow one. After the Maiden Vault comes out of shadows, choose a participating lady character. Stand it and remove it from the challenge. Interrupt. When the challenge phase ends, kneel Maiden Vault to return it to the shadows. So it is just permanent screw-up ladies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, that's...
screw up
I don't
your
know what the hell to make of this.
I think it's just so narrow that it's probably not going to see play. I mean, what other decks are really going hard on ladies other than Tyrell? I mean, maybe Targ is with Dany. Maybe Lanny is with Cersei. Anything else? I mean, I guess maybe Martell with Arianne.
This maybe. Is for Danny's love of sideboard format that no one plays.
Sure. I mean, all right, whatever. I don't care enough about this card to keep talking. Let's do the Lanny one.
I think its use is so narrow that it just doesn't see play. It's kind of neat that it's repeatable Shadows Trigger, but if Tyrell wants Shadows Triggers, it's not going to be hurting for him. He doesn't need this to do that.
Yep. Sounds right to me.
All right. Leaves us the Lanny card, Tunnels of the Red Keep. That's a name first dead players will love. It's also a three-cost Shadows location. Loyal, King's Landing, Shadow 2, and Action. Kneel Tunnels of the Red Keep to return it to Shadows. Then
that's really cool.
Yeah. Then, until the end of the phase, each character you control gets plus one strength for each card you control in Shadows. Max, one per phase. Yeah, I mean, Lanny wants repeatable Shadows triggers. It might kind of like the strength boost. I think this definitely has wider application than the Maiden Vault, for sure. I'm not sold on everybody that's super pumped about using this with Bowels, though, since this is Shadows 2. Like, I mean, I guess I can get 2 gold from Bowels after doing this so that it's like free, but then I'm not drawing. I don't know. I don't think that that's necessarily just like a straight heck yeah combination. I think it takes some finesse.
Yes, it does. It's not an easy play, but I still think you run it because you want that trigger with Cersei. Sometimes you just want that draw. That plus one strength that can happen anytime for freaking everyone is going to play hell with challenge math.
Yeah. Well, and actually, speaking of challenge math, this is going to get nasty, I think, with rules, right? Because the way this works is only everything you had in play at the time you triggered it gets the strength boost, and it's a variable boost. So if you had like 3 cards in shadows, everything you had in play right then would get plus 3. But if those cards in shadows, say, are more cards you want to bring out, say, another character or two, you bring them out. Now they don't have the boost because they weren't in play. And now the number of cards you had in shadows is not the same. So it's not just easy to look at and count and say, oh, yeah, it's 3. There's like 2 different steps of stuff that has to be remembered for the whole phase. that might be targeting, you know, three or four characters at a time. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think there are going to be games, especially like late in a tournament, high stress, long day, where that gets fucked up.
Okay. Yes. But like, cool. Like, I don't super care about that. Like, you know what I mean? People play better. If you're having problems with this, just play better and don't stress it.
Sure.
Like, so be it at the end of the day. Like, this is really, really good. You can get, like, plus 4 or 5 strength. Like, I've seen Lanny decks that get, like, 7 or 8 cards in Shadows, and getting plus 8 for your board, it seems good, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then that one character that's 3 strength, and you're like, oh, well. But, like, plus 8 for your board is going to be hella good. And, like, I think this card is probably the missing link to the Lanny Shadows builds. Because, like, this is loyal. It doesn't say to each Lannister character you control.
Sure.
So, like, with the new agenda, and when you're, like, 8 strength Queen of Thorns for the phase is going to be really good. Your 8 strength little Martell Shadows girl to make sure that you can jump in whatever you want. Like, all that stuff is super, super strong.
Well, I don't think it'll be the Queen of Thorns. I think she's loyal, yeah.
She is also loyal. You're right. The Shadow Girl.
But the other general good cards.
So, well, yeah, I guess that doesn't work. What's that stupid card's name? It's not Shadows, right? No, it's not. Sorry. I had to try and think of a card. I'm trying to think of the Barabox, but I guess there's no Shadows cards in that. Or probably not anyway, right?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't included House, or not House, but they haven't included like new mechanics and keywords in any of the House boxes that I remember. They've all been just working on like things that would have been possible with just the core set.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, as much as it sucks.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see some of that stuff fleshed out a little bit more in House boxes, but I do suppose then they would come out uneven, right? You know, the Stark and Lanny boxes early on are vanilla, and then, you know, you get like late game, I don't know, Baratheon boxes with a bunch of Shadows, and maybe Targ with Bestow or something. Yeah, it'd be lopsided.
Okay with lopsided. Just want a cool game.
I'm all for cool. I'm all for cool. I am excited, at least, that the stuff from this pack that was spoiled does seem to be doing more with Shadows and pushing the boundaries of it and giving us cards that actually care about using the Shadows mechanic versus a lot of stuff from this first cycle that just had Shadows tacked on as an afterthought.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, I'm hopeful.
I as well am hopeful. We'll see, but I am at the moment really up on where the game is headed. I think the Greyjoy box is very unhealthy, but I think there's enough other cool stuff that it doesn't super matter. Like, the game has a lot of really cool decks right now.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of wondering, this I'm sure is digressing, but it was something I was wondering and chatting about with some other folks earlier in the week, that I sort of wonder if this card gap was in some ways kind of fortuitously timed, because we had 2 of these big war-style events in the middle of it. I mean, yes, this new pack should be out in time, you know, a couple days right before Jesse's event, and will be legal for it. But a lot of the deck building, tweaking, and theory crafting, and trying zany stuff happened during the gap, when there weren't new cards coming out to like force people to try just kind of that evolutionary thing where they're just like, okay, I'll add these 2 cards to the existing deck I already had. I sort of wonder if war really pushed people to experiment and come up with a lot more cooler stuff and plumb the depths of the existing pool a lot more than we normally do.
I mean, the first board deck, I don't think did that. Sorry, the first war, I don't think did that because that was pre-even restricted list. But Jesse War, from what I've been hearing, is causing a lot of cool stuff. So, like, war was just the old meta. I feel like it was a very, very solid meta. Jesse War has been so long that people are just like, all right, let's build some stuff. And, like, it took a little bit, but people finally figured out how to solve, like, most of the nonsense in the game, and the nonsense in the game being stopped seems like a very good thing. And then, like, the counters to the counters exist. They're not amazing, but they exist. So, I don't know. I feel like we're getting there. Scott?
Cool.
Where are you on this?
No comment.
So you are not as positive and assume that nothing good is happening.
Not that nothing good is happening. I think we really need to see the full next cycle before we can say the Greyjoy box, as you stated, I think was quite unhealthy. And I think we need some positive design in order to make the game in a better, healthier place.
It's possible.
I hope so. I just kind of want this whole cycle now, so I can know that. You
know? That would be nice. If they're just like, by the way, here's the cycle, but they're pretty clearly, you know, and there was a possibility, right? Like, we thought they might do that given the hiatus, but I guess they haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there was some thought or hopes. In some regards, I was definitely wondering if they were going to do the bigger box thing like L5R got, but so far it does not look that way.
Yeah, they seem to have chosen otherwise.
Well, tell you what, unless we have anything else in particular, like on these cards or thoughts on the cycle, we've already blown half an hour on preview cards. What if we kick our way on over to Aaron's topic for the week?
Okay, so control is, as is known, my favorite archetype of the game. First edition was based entirely around control, a function of valor, limitless hand size, and the unviability of saves. Second edition has limited hand size, a limited valor, and a million saves. So that kept control in check for a really long time. I feel like we're finally at a point where it's in a good position. But before we go any further, I am going to separate control for this from passive power. I think passive power is also still really good, but that's a conversation for another time. Like, I don't want to just be talking about Drowned God, where it's just like, yeah, defend challenges, and then power happens, and then you win. Like, that's a very different archetype than what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, that's so, borderline combo. But that's a different discussion, I suppose, about classification that would be a tangent.
Yeah. So, you can classify that as control if you really want to. I would rather not, just because, like, honestly, just because I would rather not. Like, I guess there's not really much of more reason than that. Like, it ultimately comes down to personal opinion. You can consider that control. I tend to not. I think of control as more of an active thing. So, there are two types of control, hard control and soft control. Will, you love soft control. Want to run us through what that is?
Okay, so soft control is going to be control that tends to leave things on the board is really the short answer, I suppose. The longer one is that it plays around more with kind of tempo styles of the game, right? So like controlling the pacing of the game, resources in and resources out. So like something like a straightforward Neil, right? Corset Melisandre. I am temporarily disabling my opponent's investment in, say, their, I don't know, 7-cost Circe. So I'm opening a crack, but only temporarily. There are effects that have to keep being applied in order to take care of whatever your target is. Also, yeah, some icon removal, say, you know, the 5-cost Nymeria, any of these temporary effects that wear off at the end of the phase or the round, which means that you have to keep pouring more of your own resources into it, would be soft.
Yep. So, want to run through the three types I have written? Any others you can think of?
On the soft control?
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, one other one that I kind of alluded to there is icon control. It is very similar to Neil, and not all of the icon removal cards are quite soft. Well, no, I'd probably still count them as soft overall. I'm thinking of like the icon removal attachments that are permanent, but knowing that most characters are not monocons, your opponent can probably still get some other use out of the character. So, yeah, I'll still count icon removal as soft pretty much across the board then.
Okay, I can see that. I would also count icon removal as soft control. Yeah, that works. Scott, want to tell us about art control? Since that's more your style.
Sorry, I hate to jump in here, but I did.
Sure.
Did Aaron ask me to actually list the other ones he had on his sheet for soft control?
You can or not. It's fine. We'll get to them as we go anyway. If we're going to talk about them, we're going to talk about
the specifics. Sounds good. Carry on, Scott.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more my style for sure, but heart control is attrition or removal. It's changing the board a lot, right? So burning things, the Gregor type of effects, stealing things like new wallets, actively changing the board state to be in your advantage, as opposed to the self-control, which doesn't actively change the board state but manipulates it more around tempo.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, it's largely get rid of your opponent's board, right?
Negate their investment and not have to keep spending on it yourself. Like, I don't know, Dracaris or something. You blew up their card, and you don't have to keep paying over and over for that Dracaris.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I listed 5 decks that I think are all T1 decks, one for each different type of control that came to mind off the top of my head. First, the honorable mention, I think Lenny control is really close. It's sort of a mix of hard control and soft control because it mixes, I consider hand destruction soft control. Will, would you consider that soft control?
You know, I debated about that a little bit when I saw it here, on your list. At first, I wanted to object, but the more I thought about it, I think soft control is probably right. You know, like, you're going to have to keep applying pressure to their hand. Otherwise, even if they don't, you know, trigger some other draw effects, be that Dorn or whatever, just natural game mechanics will continue to refill their hand, which means you have to keep applying your own pressure against it. So, yes. I would count it soft.
Nice. So I would consider that Circe soft control. Gregor would be hard control, right? Like, he's an ambush hard control effect. There's a lot of ambush hard control effects in this game. Meanwhile, sorry, got distracted. Meanwhile, like the new Sir Mandon Moore, who's coming out. Oh, well, I guess he'll be out by the time you guys hear this, is sort of a mix between the two, where you can discard two cards or choose and kill the character. So, like, I think that Mandon Moore, and especially when Tunnels comes out, like, all that stuff with Clever Feint is going to be really, really, really strong.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that probably pushes it to T1. Like, Mandon should be able to discard your hand real fast.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. And I really hope it does turn out to be strong. But I do think when you've got a card like Mandon, where it's a choice between a soft control effect or a hard control effect, that and it's under your opponent's control, I should say, that I think I would put him in the end under soft control, because they're always going to choose the less punishing option, whatever that is, and that's probably soft control most of the time.
So the thing is, they're always going to choose what they. This is that why I think control is so fun. They're always going to choose what they can from what they can see is the best option. Sure. But you've got multiple other options because you've got, especially in the Shadows deck, so much hidden information.
That's part of my love of Shadows, right? Like to make sure that they are not planning correctly.
Like they decide to discard two cards, save the character. They're planning on doing X, Y, and Z with the character. You Clever Feint Mandon, bring him right back out, and now they have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't think the deck is there. I think it's extremely close. I think Mandon might push it there. It'll be there if we do this again in a couple months. But anything about Lannister, Scott? Sorry, did you play the Lanny Kraken that we had for a while?
I played it, and I didn't think it was very good.
I think it's very good. I just think that it, along with Martell's Starfall, are the decks that, if there were no such things as time limits, I would take to tournaments. Like, I feel like if you give me infinite time, I'll get to 15 before my opponent. It just might take 2 hours. And I might randomly deck myself. Okay. Number 5 on the list, Bar of Faith with a bunch of Neil, is completely amazing. It fits the Neil archetype. It is absolutely T1. I have no idea why it doesn't see more play, because basically what you do is you ignore all the big bear dudes and you fill your entire deck with 5 cost guys. You can run the Dom deck if you want, but you don't need to. Really, really, really great in the deck is the one where if you win Dom, you get 2 power on characters, because the Baron Unlimited is the MVP of this deck. Just keeping all that power that would otherwise not be on your house. So you're basically reset proof. You always have characters. They're not super expensive. You can kneel whatever your opponent's doing to cause you trouble. And like, there's just no way for them to gain power against you. The deck is super strong and should definitely be seeing more play.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've not seen anything like that down here. I think I'm probably going to have to chalk that up to Stark and to some extent Targ scaring folks off with a lot of stands still running pretty wild down here. So, I don't know.
Yeah. You just don't really super care if they stand. Like, any power they get is power for you to steal. If they get a power on one of their characters, you just move it to their house and take it. Right? Like, it's very, very hard for them to get more than 1 or 2 power per turn, and you can almost always get 2 per turn.
Yeah. Is that deck running Starcept also for acceleration?
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
And if they're not getting power on their house, you can always Starcept blank something, take the power off them once
they're
blank, and then take it back and be like, thank you. Just a power transfer system. Yeah. It's very good. There are a couple of versions. One runs, I can't think of the look up. Which is the one that draws cards for kneeling characters?
Oh, crud. You would ask me, Blackwater or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Blackwater Bay. Like, Red Keep is the main draw, but there's some that focus on Blackwater, and Blackwater can be really good. just a lot of Neil, a lot of ways to negate challengey stuff. And, like, your opponent's going to win some challenges, right? But unless they're overflowing with Renown, which is really largely just Stark, they don't have a way to do anything with any of it. So,
okay.
It's a very strong deck. It can struggle. Yeah. Scott, any thoughts or ideas on that?
On the Barrow deck? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of damn stamps if Targ's around. But if Targ isn't around, that helps a lot.
So is there really that much stand in Targ anymore? Isn't it just one location?
Just Plaza?
Like, I'm not sure.
People don't play Waking?
People don't play who? Oh, haven't seen Waking at all.
I mean, I always think it's fun to slip a single in just to be cheeky. But I still occasionally see a singleton Illyrio floating around, too. I mean, that's not a lot, but...
But that's just a
Plaza
mistake.
Plaza does a lot on its own.
Yeah, Plaza's annoying.
I think it's Waking, Plaza, and what's the Bring a Hatchling Back from Den?
Fire and Blood, I still right? see. Fire and Blood. Yeah, I still see Fire and Blood.
Fire and Blood is a Fox stand, right? Because you're getting a standing character out of nowhere.
Yeah, but it's a 2-3 strength character. The deck goes so wide that ends up not really being a problem. Danny can be a problem, but spoiler, deck runs milk. And now you're playing the stupid game about, can I keep enough gold on my begging brothers to yada yada. Targ's not a bad matchup. It's not an amazing matchup, but it's not a bad matchup. Stark is much more annoying than Targ in general. Stark has more stand.
Well, Stark has stand location, and now they're getting another stand location.
Yeah,
they're getting a bad one that's not going to see play, so it doesn't matter. They've got Skagos, and they've got Rob, and they've got Wyman, and that's a lot of stand. So the best thing Jesse did for the meta was make everyone play Big Cat, who's really good, but, like, if you're building around Big Cat, that changes the construction of your deck. And, like, it makes Stark harder to stop for certain decks, but it also really leaves them vulnerable to, like, that cat, if you're taking a power off her and just stealing it every turn, is not nearly as good, right? She's still gaining a power a turn, but, like, you should be able to steal that power relatively easily, keep her strength down, and move on. It's not, like, that cat is not horrible for this deck, whereas, like, running the old, like, Eddard and all the other stuff is very, very annoying.
Whew! Corset Eddard.
No, Fast Eddie.
Oh, you said the old Eddard, and we were talking stand effects and such. So I thought you actually meant Core Eddard for a second.
No, he doesn't exist.
Core Eddard is not good.
Core Eddard is not good.
You know where he's?
These are long.
You know where he's great? Melee.
Sure, he's great in Melee, whatever game that is, and he would be good if he's a fine card. Stark just has like 1, 2, 3, 4 better 6 costers, and like what?
But he's a 7 coster.
Yeah, 6 or higher costers. It has 4 better 6 costers, and one of them shares his name.
They're very different Eddards. They feel very different decks.
Yeah, but one fits in decks that Stark runs, and one doesn't.
Ouch. I mean, I want to keep defending Core Eddard, but I'm not sure I can.
He's fine. It's just, like, stealth is... if he had stealth, he'd be completely nuts, right? But he doesn't. It may be, like, I guess it's possible there's a Stark cohort that runs him and just, like, Voltrons his ass up. But, like, even then, like, Stark cohort has a different build that's just better. Like, he's good.
Now you got me wanting to try that out, though.
Seems fun, right? Like, you just stick an intrigue icon on him and a seal and then watch him go.
Yeah. You know, he's not loyal, so maybe I make that Greyjoy Alliance Wolf cohort so I can have Pike and give him stealth?
Cool. That seems good.
It gets pretty convoluted.
I mean, is there just not an attachment that gives stealth somewhere?
So I don't think so.
Do you take Old Bear? Does Old Bear give stealth, or just what's his name? The Raven.
The Raven does.
Does it give it to anybody? Right,
this is too ridiculous. We got to move on.
Where's Jesse when I need him? He would back.
Jesse would build this. Jesse would be like, by the way, I built this deck 6 months ago. It's the stones. And then then I would have to listen to him tell everyone about how it's T1 for the next month.
That's true. Also, yes, Old Bear's Raven does give stealth to anybody. So there you go.
There you go.
Okay. Well, anyway, we really digressed. So what's up next?
Next is Jumper Attrition. I think Jumper Attrition is super good. The archetype, there's 50 ways to build it, but the one I chose is Martell Shadows, because I think it's the coolest. I talk a lot of Martell with Martin Lewis. He's a British Martell loyalist, and he's final tabled like 3 regionals with it already, and not regional, store championship. That's the season we're in. Like 3 store championships with it already. And like,
I think technically we're supposed to be done with store championships even, but
Well, they're still going for sure because there were a bunch last weekend. But so he not only has he like anytime he hasn't final tabled, he's only lost to the eventual winner of the tournament. So like, the deck is super good. It's super consistent. It has an answer for basically everything. It plays basically attrition using surprises to set up that attrition. Like, it took a hit with the restricted list, but it loses less than most decks. And not that I've spoken with him, not that anything else. I'm pretty sure it's completely freaking insane with the Rivergate. Is that what the Martell one is called? Yeah, right?
Oh, let's see. Are those on Thrones DB yet?
Oh, who knows?
Some of them are, but not all. So, not sure. Don't really want to go to Card Game TV.
Just to get a bunch of viruses. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The deck is basically built around the Starfall Spy. If you can get Hotaz X, it runs multiple Hotaz X. You can do all sorts of cool stuff with everyone from 7-cost Ariane, who's also kind of good with Hotaz X, to Mag the Mighty, whose best friend is the Desert Raider. It's just...
Oh, yeah. Took me a sec. I was like, what? He's giving power? How does that... Oh, never mind.
Yes.
The kill.
Yeah, you just kill your own Desert Raider, and then, like, by the time they want to do something back to you, you have your Desert Raider back, and then you can do it all over again. It's completely insane. Unless they just want to let you win every challenge, which is also an acceptable decision. It runs just a lot of very cool, very powerful cards. It's also, I think, the very last deck in the game that Core Varus works in, and that remains basically my favorite card. It's got a million cool flea bottom tricks. It's basically the deck of all the tricks. It won a regional in Poland this weekend. It's very T1. It occasionally loses to Rush that goes off, but like we're at a point in the game where that's just a true thing of every deck. Like, sometimes Rush goes off and wins, and, like, there's nothing you can really do about that. It's not the healthiest thing, but here we are. And it loses it can beat, but loses reasonably consistently to Greyjoy C. It, however, usually doesn't really care about Targ C. It's really good against Targ C. Targ C does not like getting varused.
I can see.
Greyjoy C has Vince. They did not print Vince and Targaryen.
That's fair. They needn't fear a character ability nearly as much.
Yeah. But the deck is awesome. And it's only this low because I think that T1 control is... Baroneel with Faith, I think, is close to T1, but it's Barra, so it's hard to actually say if people just don't know how to play against Barra. But I think this is the first of the 4 T1 control decks.
I would definitely put this up there with Martell. I mean, and the attrition here. I do find it well, I was about to say I find it interesting versus what you put it at number three, because of the difference between hard control versus soft control. I would think in most cases that I would deem hard control superior. So I kind of want to explore why you would put a soft control deck at number three over the hard control here in four. But that might be jumping the gun a little bit since we haven't talked about what three is.
Got anything to add about Martell Shadows?
What about Martell Shadows?
Anything to add about it?
Not really. Aaron, you're all on this. This is your...
No, it's not. I haven't played it in, honestly, more than for a game or two in literally like a month and a half. I don't enjoy it as much after the restricted list. It's still really, really good. But like, it's not what I'm playing. I've been playing Wars Fealty and the number three.
Well then, I look forward to hearing number three since you've been tinkering with it lately.
Number three is Martell Icon Control. Full credit where it's due. Every version of this we have is a variation on Colt Humbert's deck. Colt is, I don't want to say the best deck builder in the game, but he's damn close. He's definitely the best cohort deck builder in the game because he built the big Jontron, the Jontron cohort, and he built this Martell cohort, which I think trumps everyone else who, like, Tyrell cohort came out of, like, all the other cohorts came from different people. It's basically him or Hano, right? Like, for cohort building. But, yeah, he's unbelievable as a builder. And Icon Control is amazing when you can choose what you're controlling when. Your opponent just can't do anything against this deck as a general rule. You would think it would lose to Targ, but it just doesn't for whatever reason. Like, turns out, Starfall is good against Drogo. Like, once you get that out, Drogo's a nice, very overcosted Iron Throne. Grey Worm is a bit of a problem, but, like, since he's the only thing that has icons, it's usually not so bad.
Sorry, was that Drogon, the dragon, rather than Drogon.
Oh. Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry. Okay. Drogon. Grey Worm being no attachments for God knows what reason is annoying.
Is anybody playing Grey Worm lately, though? Man, everybody I'm talking to keeps cutting him in the last round of stuff.
He belongs in Targ C. Yeah. I don't really care about him anywhere else, but he belongs, like, he shouldn't be in your other Targ decks, but he belongs in Targ C.
Okay.
Like, just in Targ C, getting -3 strength on that military is ridiculous. Also super annoying, the -1 for everyone for Coster dude. The 10 strength pain in the ass. There's a lot of really good Targ Sea of Blood cards. I'm not sure Targ Sea of Blood is significantly behind Greyjoy, but that's a conversation for aggro week when we talk about aggro decks. But Martell Cohort beats all of those, like, super consistently. The only reason it's not higher, because I think it usually beats number 1 and 2 on this list, the only reason it's not higher is because Night's Watch just eats its lunch. Like, Night's Watch just sits there sadly. Like, you sit there sadly with all your attachments and no speed as they gain 2 power a turn. Even if you can stop them once in a while, it's nowhere near enough.
Yeah. that makes sense. It for a faction that is, I guess maybe one of their main strengths is that they mostly can't take attachments. That does seem pretty tough for a cohort deck.
Yeah, it's just super annoying. Scott, you've been playing this deck a lot. What are your thoughts on it?
It's very good, but I think it's just an insta loss loses to Night's Watch, as you mentioned. If people can't tell, I really hate what the Greyjoy box did to the game, and I think this just kills the Greyjoy box, so it makes me happy. I think it also loses to other Martell decks.
Yeah, that's fair. I have played all of, like, 2 Martell against Martell games lately in planning for a war tournament, so that's very fair. That's fair. Like, I'm also...
Yeah, this
I am curious. Elaborate a little bit on what the weakness is here versus other Martell decks.
Because it's focused on negative attachments, and other Martell decks don't keep things on the board, so they're going to Arion something in, or Rubara something in, or Flea Bottom something in, and then sack their Flea Bottom Bastard and bring it in, so the attachment's going to keep coming off.
Ah, okay, so they're going to keep removing the cards that you drop your attachments onto. Okay.
So the attachments are almost worthless. I mean, they have a temporary worthwhile value, but then they just come back to your hand, and you have to keep replaying them, and you don't have the money or the hand size.
The reserve issue then becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. The money, the hand size, and you're also losing resources on the board to Kohar, because everything keeps coming back. Martell cards don't stay in play.
It's very annoying.
Okay.
But you know your meta. If you don't have a lot of Martell or a Night's Watch right now, if you take a Martell Kohar, if you can figure out how to build it, because, I mean, you can ask Jesse. Jesse doesn't know how to keep his mouth shut about decks. But if you play a Martell Kohar, like, you're going to beat basically everything but those two matches. It's even really good against Lanny Shadows Jumper. Like, it still beats that.
Yeah, I don't think it could beat a deck with Shadow City Bastards. Like, that revolves around doing things like Shadow City Bastard and Darion and such is what I meant.
I've had no problems with Shadow City Bastards. It runs to Isle of Ravens. Just make sure they don't happen more than once. Doesn't bug me at all.
Yeah, I meant, like, things that repeatably jump. So Arion and Obara are problems.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
As long unless you can move them.
Yeah.
All right. Number two, I am definitely taking our esteemed missing co-host Jesse's opinion highly here. Steel New Wall is incredible. I hear it's really good at a green side. I personally have played it out of Wolf. It is very, very T1. There are enough tools for it to win without New Wall. So against Greyjoy, you just wait for them to blow their 5-7-1. As long as you don't get unluckily pillaged, you beat Greyjoy. And that seems like a really good combo. Like, New Wall is great against Targ. It's great against Greyjoy. It also struggles into Builders and Martell, but it is otherwise absolutely a T1 deck with an amazing set of attrition tools.
So I'm curious then, what do you feel has really pushed that recently? Because I feel like, what, maybe 6 months or so ago, people were trying to push New Wall, and it really kind of petered out. Was there something in the Greyjoy box, or is it just where the rest of the meta has kind of moved? Thanks to the restricted list. What's up?
The meta's gotten bigger.
The meta has moved away from Targ being everywhere, which really helps, because that stupid Targ location is annoying. But even more than that, the two Night's Watch cards in the first pack are completely freaking nuts.
That builder, man. Wow.
Go get Isle of Ravens, Flea Bottom, Bay of Seals, or Queen's Crown.
Well, I don't think he can grab Isle of Ravens, right? Doesn't he have to
grab... He can't grab Isle of Flea Bottom. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you just get Hard's Home, Queen's Crown, or Bay of Seals. Or, you know, Economy.
Yeah, yeah. You've still got a lot of
options. Or you get the one-cost limited thing, right? Which also seems good.
One-cost limited? Oh, the new one, the Flea Bottom Alley or whatever?
Yep.
Yeah.
That also seems phenomenal. Whether you use that to put the builder into play or vice versa, that card is awesome. Like, the deck is just really, really silly good. It's got the best draw card in the game. So, like, I'm not sure what the downside is here. It's going to have a bad match in the best draw card in the game?
No. I was just thinking about all the locations, and that sent me to thinking about Isle of Ravens and how a lot of folks, particularly, you know, co-hosts I've chatted with and such, are really down on things like Flea Bottom as your restricted choice because of how prevalent Isle of Ravens is. does the Isle of Ravens prevalence not muck with New Wall? I feel like a lot of times they would be able to just, you know, ditch whatever their best character is right back into the deck, so it couldn't be taken.
You just have to discard enough stuff, right? Like, you can't just do one thing. You have to make them fill their discard so you always have choices. And, like, it's not like the deck doesn't run steal from play things. Again, I personally prefer the version in Stark. I'm actually not running Flea Bottom in the Stark one. I'm running Ward, so I can just take your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Why else would you be grabbing, you know, Banner Wolf, if not for Ward, right?
If you Queen's Crown one thing and Mutiny another, you're going to get a character. I also think really important advice for the deck. People are going to make you go first a lot. Going first is ideal because it means in standing phase you get first action. So timing that well is extremely important. Like, if you're you can overflow an Isle of Ravens relatively quickly. You can't overflow two Targ locations at all. Marini's Markets will screw this the hell up. Builders doesn't super care about this. They're just like, I'm going to sit here and gain my power. And you're going to look at me as I gain all my power. But short of builders, like, this is real hard to, like, back to. And Martell can beat it because, like, when you steal Martell characters, they just kind of shrug and play another cheap nothing character.
Yeah, and a lot of those characters you can't use for their benefit, you know, whatever their effect is, because you wind up giving them back to your opponent in some way when you do it.
But it crushes Stark. And it crushes Greyjoy. And Baron Lanny, but that's less relevant. And it can beat Targ, which is nice. Like, if Targ doesn't see the markets right away and you get set up quickly, you can beat Targ. You just need to, like it's a very high variance match. It's probably 55-45 in their favor, I'd say.
Okay. I mean, that's not a terrible spread. Yeah. I would.
Like, it's just a really good attrition deck that, like, has options, and having options seems good.
Yeah.
I
mean, number one. And it seems like maybe at a stronger end of attrition is being able to not only negate your opponent's resources, but in some way use them against them. So here you go. You're using their cards. Even if they didn't put in a gold investment because you discarded it with Greenside or whatever, like, you're still getting to use
them. Marched and so on. Nothing's better than marching a couple of their guys at Veteran Builder and taking them both.
For sure.
It's a very strong call.
I just meant even if you aren't taking those resources out of the equation, but often I'm sure you are.
And number one, which I still think is probably the best Targ deck, despite... Hey, look, I found the white book deck. Despite Targ Sea of Blood being so good, Buzz style Targ Fealty is just super, super good. Like, it keeps it. The restricted list has done almost nothing to it because it just loses trade routes and moves right on with life because it wasn't running Marine. So, like, it runs a little bit more econ and it continues to be completely phenomenal. And, like, the deck is just incredibly strong and incredibly consistent. It's a very high skill cap deck, but assuming you have that skill cap, like, it can beat almost anything. And its key card is, by the way, Astapor, is completely insane in the meta right now.
Oh, it's interesting to hear Astapor coming back. It was really not long ago that I heard people saying, you know, kind of hanging it out to dry. What do you think is pushing Astapor?
You want to win by 5 for Sea of Blood. Making a -4 is good.
That's a lot. That's a lot of negative.
Like, losing trade routes hurts for that, and you have to put something else with some decent econ in there in its place. But it's not the end of the world, because, I mean, Slaver's Bay port never stopped being really good economy. Beggar King never stopped being really good economy. So you just use them, and you're super effective. Like, it's tempo, and it works really, really well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, econ, if you want to say it's tempo, that kind of works. But, I mean, the deck as a whole, I think you said earlier, is...
Oh, yeah, it's hard to control. It's burn. It's got some jumper stuff, but it's basically burn. It's burn with enough big guys to stall you out. The crazy part in it to me when I first saw it is that it only runs one Caldrogo. The deck is posted on... Buzz posted it on Thrones TV. Like, it's literally the same deck minus trade routes, and then you can screw around with numbers as per your preferences. But, like, it's the same deck minus trade routes.
Okay.
And I ended up cutting the support of the people for, like, more econ.
You know, I think it's really interesting that this is the deck you would place at number one. And I definitely think I would agree with it. Like I alluded to earlier about, like, if push came to shove, I pick hard control as stronger than soft control. But kind of like looking back at the history of Game of Thrones, when certain factions have been considered oppressive, for instance, Lannister in first edition, right? We'll take that as a popular example where they were a strong soft control house that also kind of had the tempo tools to push that, right? They had both the draw and the economy to push that constant influx of resources that was needed. I think it's very interesting to see in second edition how some of that has shifted around, and you wind up with a soft control deck like Vera much further down that pile because they really don't have the tempo tools at the level they need. But then you've got hard control, which is already stronger to begin with than soft control, right? Because it straight up removes something that somebody has already invested in. And you've got a hard control house like Targ, and then they've got like crazy tempo tools in really solid draw and econ. I mean, yes, the restricted list did break that up some, thankfully, when they had the burn and the econ and the draw, Isdar and Marine, all in the same deck. That was mind-boggling. But like you said, they've still got a lot of other good options. You know, Beggar King is not bad now, for instance, or a bunch of other cards.
Yeah, I mean, the deck, I think, is just phenomenal. Like, I think it's a work of genius. Like, I think the numbers of characters in the deck is unreal. How well it all goes together to burn is really, really great. It feels reasonably first edition. Like, it's still got the centerpiece characters. Like, you'd almost never run a three of in first edition for, like, a burn card like Dany. But, like, she's terminal burn. She makes so much happen. So many good things happen because you have these cards in your deck. I think this deck is just incredible. I also don't think it necessarily has a bad matchup in the meta, which is part of why it's so high. Like, it's not necessarily super plus against things. Like, the Cohort is super plus against, like, a lot of decks. Like, I think the Cohort usually beats this, but, like, usually beats this. Whereas there's just so many good options. And, like, if this sees its Karth early, guess what? And it runs three draw plots, right? So, like, if this sees its Karth early, like, you're in a lot of trouble as the Cohort. There's not a ton for it. So, like, I don't know. I think this is a really, really cool, really strong deck.
Yeah.
Scooter?
Yeah, I think it's well placed in the meta right now. Saves get burned past, which is obviously good in a Greyjoy based meta. I think Astapor probably is hurt by Greyjoy, but I haven't really played through that. Yeah, I think what will keep something like this down is table and chair or someone who really knows how to play defense builders kind of decks.
It usually beats builders in that, like, if you can, like, again, a lot of that matchup is Karth, right? But if you have Karth out, like, you can usually comfortably keep Danny clear of attachments, and then it's just a bunch of two cost guys for you to burn to death. Like,
are the builders you're playing seized? Because they should be playing seized.
Seized by the guard?
Okay. That has been
builders is traditional.
And then you see
okay, fair enough.
You just seize cards and then you're fine.
I mean, they also have multiple. Usually, this one has one. But Targ generally has at least two Vis, too, right? But then you Isle, and now we're playing that game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think, like, I don't think the average builder player, like, if you're someone who picked the builders and you're just like, I play defense, but I think if you're, like, a really good builders player, it's a plus matchup for you. It's not like I played tons of reps, but I'm pretty sure that's how it would work.
I also want to pour one out for my favorite control deck in the game, which no longer exists. Martell Wolf. Which was literally my favorite deck in the history of the game. It was the only deck I liked for like a year and a half. I don't think it exists. I just rebuilt a Martell Wolf that I think might be good. But like, I'm not even going to have time to test it for like at least 3-4 weeks. But, when this is released, it'll be the weekend of Jesse's tournament. But like, we're 2 weeks out, a week and a half out. Like, we've got our decks locked in for ever now, so I can't really afford to just be like, hey, I built this new thing with unreleased cards that aren't on Thrones DB, so I'm gonna test it now. Like, I think at the gates and this and the I'll just say what it does, I don't care. At the gates with Rivergate, although you're not usually Rivergating, usually getting Gates of the Moon, but if they get Gates of the Moon, you can get Rivergate, and then you can run three King's Landing, because now you should have enough economy. Keep trade routes as restricted. King's Landing goes real, real well with things like Harrenhal and the Prince's Pass and Gaston Grey, and now you've got like a deck. And if you need draw, you've got every single turn, you can draw two cards, because you're going to lose two challenges per turn. So I feel like that might work. I mean, who the hell knows? Like, I won't until I try, because there's been a lot of things I've thought might work for Martell Wolf that haven't yet. But the deck is cool, at least. So I'll take at least a cool Martell Wolf over no Martell Wolf at all.
Hey, man, sometimes you find something you're loyal to, and you just want to stick with it.
Landing Knights?
Yeah. Oh, maybe it'll exist again one day. Looking forward to trying Lanny Shadows. Because really, that's what that Lanny Knights deck was. So, hopefully that'll come together.
I think it does. I think it might be ready. Like, we'll screw around with it as soon as these new cards are actually out. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at more pretty hard.
They're out in our heart.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that segment.
Yeah.
Props.
Man, Scott's kicking us right into prop and slops. I'm pretty sure that means he has to give one.
Nope. I was just saying, I hope you enjoyed that segment, so I was trying to move this along.
Yeah.
I'm not a positive person. There's nothing I want to prop. I only want to slop the universe.
That's pretty wide there. I don't know that we can let you slop the entire universe.
I mean, I'm in it, and I'm a ray of sunshine, so really.
Prop. Props to cards. New cards actually coming back and being a thing.
Very excited to finally have new cards in hand.
I've been pretty down on Thrones, and I'm hoping I'll be less down.
Just play the wrong decks, man. There's a lot of cool decks that beat.
I've been playing
a deck I gave you. Every time I see you, I'm checking you're playing that cohort. There's other decks.
Send me a list of other decks that I can just copy and paste, and I'll play those other decks I can copy and paste.
8 Martell lists that are all really good and fun. It turns out, by the way, that I'm never really planning on playing not Martell again. I'm a much happier person when I'm just playing Martell. Like, I guess if I'm drafted into a tournament, I can play not Martell. But, like, short of that, like, I'm just not going to play Martell, which should also hopefully tank out my value for anyone who's not Martell. So that if you get stuck with me, you're just wasting money. Like, I learned that at, like, I mean, like, look, I can still build things and talk things and look at things, but I just don't have fun, as much fun in the game when I'm not playing Martell. Like, even the other control decks, like, I hate New Wall. Slaps to New Wall is a concept. It's a high variance, boring fest. Like, I just want to play some nice tempo control. Martell's the only thing that does that. If other things do that, I'll start playing other houses again. Maybe Lanny.
I think it'll be worth it to tinker around with. I'm really looking forward to it. It's kind of amazing now. Just a couple new cards fills me with a whole lot more, I don't know, ideas and positivity.
Some of those cards are really cool. Hey, props to FFG or Danny or whoever came up with this. I bet you it's Danny. Like, all the limited locations are coming out in the same pack. And it seems like a bunch of Shadows locations are coming out in that fourth pack, like, all together, so that we're just getting unified themes along, like, and those are coming out with the Shadow agenda. I really appreciate not having to wait, like, 8 packs for a bunch of different cards. Like, apparently we can't do that with cities, right? But I get that, because there's only plots and neutrals in a set. But, like, we're doing it with the economy, like, I really, really appreciate that. It keeps things much more even. Although, Slops for giving Bear the worst one again.
Bear is okay.
Bear is never going to be good. I don't think...
The box will be out in like a month, man. Like, we'll see if the... Like, I'm not ready to say they'll never be good until the box is out. Because I think that Bob might break the meta.
I don't think he's good enough, because there's still too much stand.
I mean... So that's kind of not the point. Like, it's not a question of how much stand there is. It's a question of, like, how many resources you have to use to get that stand. And, like, you can only do that for a turn or two before he's going to take over.
I hope you're right.
He's going to be real, real good. But also, it gives me a nice Martell stag to play, which is cool. I hate current Martell stag. Cancer Lancer is trash. But, like, if you let me put Renly and... Melisandre in that deck? Now we're talking. I'm going to jump in a 7-cost Ariane, Hota's Axe for free, win a challenge, gain a card, bounce something to hand, then lose a challenge with something else, bounce in a Desert Raider, kill something else with Melisandre. Let's go. It'll be amazing. I'm going to be able to make cool plays again. That's all I want in this game. I want to be able to make cool plays.
It sounds like you became a Shaga player.
So you're a Shaga player.
No. I want cool control, though. I mean, look, I'd like to win also, but, like, it's just... So, I mean, this really came to a head in Poland, right? Like, when we played first edition in Poland, and there was this turn where an opponent made this huge challenge at me with, like, duped characters and, like, a million renown, and, like, I was like, all right. So I Sivis this, and then I Ghast and Gray that, and then because of this, I can use Darkstar, and then, like, and then like four or five different like things I could do that were like plays in response to what my opponent did to turn the game. Like, and then the same thing in the next game where like my opponent needed X, Y, and Z and managed to find them and like screwed me up. Like, that's cool and I'm all for it. Like, I want big plays that are based on players seeing paths and skill that you can make, and when they happen against me, it's not like I'm mad, it's just they're cool plays. I just don't want to lose to, like, I set up Asha, and I'm running Desert Raider, and I have two pinch, and there's nothing you can do about that. Like, that's not a cool play. That's, I drew some shit. I drew some shit is not playing a game. That's, like, flipping coins. I want cool stuff to happen because we made cool things happen. It's also the same reason I don't like New Wall. Oh, and the top three cards of my deck was Major Card X was Bob. Now I lose. Like, that's not fun.
What is fun? I feel like, man, we're like propping and slapping a lot of actually card-related stuff. It's kind of rare for us, lady. I'm going to jump out on a limb, and I'm going to pre-prop Cloak and Dagger. I really enjoyed Season 1, and Season 2 is going to start in the meantime before folks hear this episode. But I saw that Alamo Drafthouse is doing a screening of the first two episodes at the theater. So I'm tentatively excited for that, but it didn't work out super well for Inhumans and IMAX. So we'll see.
I like it. I haven't watched anything lately at all. Props to Fantasy Baseball. I've been getting ready for that. It's been really fun. I don't enjoy it every year, but I have this year. That's nice. Props to Senators of the Multiverse, because Oblivion came out, and it's amazing. On the app, it came out.
Right, right. No, I actually, thanks to you talking about that, I remembered this past week that, oh, shoot, I haven't actually ever played on the app, so I downloaded it and started playing some. It feels a little weird to me to be, you know, not playing with other people controlling the heroes and stuff. But I like it. It's a solid app.
I'm a really, really big fan of the app. Yeah, I think I'm out of stuff. What you got, Scott?
I don't do this. I made a concession for Will because I messed up.
You know you got one more.
I'm going to slop you for trying to drag things out of me. There we go.
Scott's wit is working.
All right. Okay. So, Will, where are we?
Oh, sounds like the danger zone to me.
All right. Let's close this chapter of the White Book.
Danger zone to me.
Think it needs. I really, sorry, a kid just emailed me, a student just emailed me. Someone else, take it away, please.
I don't, you were just starting a thought. I don't know how to take the rest of that thought away. Because I don't know what it was.
A kid was like, I might stop doing this really important thing that I'm doing. It's like, no, you're really good at this important thing. Please don't do that. Sorry. Thought gone.
Keep doing
the thing. You're good at the thing. Just keep it going. All right, whatever.